We've all heard that Microsoft Azure has tremendous support for open source. Not only do we support virtual machines running on Windows and in Linux, but we also have support for numerous languages, including PHP, Node.js, Java, etc. We also have support for mobile services that not only encompasses our Windows phone, but also iOS and Android, not to mention all of the different database systems supported, everything from MongoDB to other MySQLs, Redis, CouchDB, all of these great things. So how did Microsoft actually make this journey into open source? What has it been like? How has the culture internally really been changing to enable this embracing of open source? In today's Dev Radio episode, I'm going to talk to Matt Winkler, the group program manager of the HD Insight product, and find out more. Hello, in today's episode of Dev Radio, I'm speaking with Matt Winkler, the group program manager of the HD Insight product. Matt, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Jennifer?
Very good. Thank you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're doing?
Sure. So I'm responsible for one of the teams of program managers that work on HD Insight, which is our big data service inside of Azure. And we do everything from working with customers to figuring out what features we're going to go build, learning how customers are using the product, and trying to help them take advantage of all of the data that's being generated inside of their apps and in the cloud.
That's awesome. Now, I know that big data is a huge buzzword in the industry, but what I found when talking to folks is that people don't always completely understand what big data actually means. How would you define big data?
Okay. You know, one of my favorite definitions for big data is that it's data that is of such a size or shape that you have to think about how you'd process it rather than just use a database for that. If you think about a lot of apps that we build, we just, hey, I'll throw up SQL or I'll throw up a Mongo as my data store, and I don't think about it ever again. I write a bunch of code to store data there, and I use it in a very transactional fashion. But when apps start scaling a lot, the size of the data may be something that, you know, expands beyond the boundary of what you can fit on a single machine. It could be the shape of the data is kind of funny. So if you think about processing JSON documents or unstructured text like web pages, the other thing that can happen is the type of question you might want to ask may be different. So rather than just saying, how many widgets did I sell last month, you might want to say, let me look at all of these tweets and figure out what if it's positive or negative sentiment for my product. And so that's kind of a different type of question that you're asking. And kind of all of those things kind of fall under the category of big data.
Right, right. That's a great definition. So big data is happening in the industry. Big data is a huge part of what's going on right now. We've seen with the Internet of Things movement, if there are all these sensors that are sending all of this useful information to the cloud, we then have to have a way to process and make sense of all of that. So it seems like at the beginning, Microsoft was just kind of generically saying, like, how were we doing? We probably wanted to get into the big data space, I'm assuming, but did we have experience at that point in big data?
Yeah.
Before the HD Insight began?
Yeah. Yeah. So actually, if you look at kind of the history of what's shaped big data, you know, it really came from folks who were trying to solve this problem of large volumes of unstructured text that they're trying to make sense out of. And so you had two primary industries that were really good at that. One was the web search industry. So Bing and Google and Yahoo and all of those folks who were trying to get a copy of the internet and make sense out of it. The other group that was doing that were intelligence agencies who had large volumes of unstructured text trying to make sense out of it. Yeah. One of those two groups is more apt to publish their results and talk about what they're doing.
I wonder which one.
Yeah. And so, you know, for a long time inside of Microsoft, we've been doing big data in order to run Bing so that we can deliver up-to-the-minute search results, so that we can deliver relevant ads, all of those types of things that Bing does. The same thing is happening, obviously, inside of Google. Other big companies like Twitter and Facebook also have these similar types of problems that are doing interesting things in the big data space. And so all of those folks had largely been doing things internal to the company. And this has started to spill out, as you mentioned earlier, you know, with the price of sensors getting so low, you can now put them in anything. If you have a mobile app that's deployed to millions of devices and you want to get all the telemetry off the application, that's also a big data problem. And so it's kind of moving from the Google, Bing, Facebook NSAs of the world to, you know, we talk with companies that are in manufacturing. We talk with companies that are in high tech and energy production. All of them have big data problems now, so they need to solve it.
All right. So big data was a thing. We knew that we as Microsoft wanted to be a part of that and play well in that space. So then how did the decision come to use an open source product, Apache Hadoop, as our big source? Because from what you've said, we have all this expertise in big data from handling, you know, Bing, all that telemetry data from Office and Windows and all these other great examples that you've given. We had the expertise. So what made us choose Apache Hadoop?
Yeah, so, you know, really that was talking with customers and finding out that for most of the customers, they're looking at solving the big data problem using these open source tools. And Hadoop has kind of expanded. It's a big, it technically only refers to two or three little projects, but the Hadoop ecosystem is probably 30 or 40 projects, all with funny animal names that do different things. And that's really how most of our customers at the time were telling us, look, we need to process big data. The way that my competitor is doing it is through this Hadoop thing or Pig or Hive. How do I do that with Microsoft? And so that really started us down the path of saying, this is what customers want. And so it's a pretty logical thing for us to go do to, you know, to satisfy that need.
Well, that's awesome. And I think that really does speak to the culture shift at Microsoft, the fact that here's this problem and there was an open source solution that was solving it. And we're like, awesome, you know, let's embrace this. This is great. You know, Microsoft has come a long way in the last 10 years that we're, you know, so openly saying, yeah, this is what customers want. This is great. We're not going to build it ourselves. Let's embrace this existing solution. So that's incredible. So I would guess then your next solution, the next kind of big question that you guys would have to deal with is, this is an open source project, right? So there's Apache Hadoop, and I know that there are some enterprise distributions that are out there. Cloudera and Hortonworks and such have enterprise distributions that they maintain. But then I'm sure that we could probably maintain our own distribution as well. So how was that decision made? Like we figured out we wanted to use Hadoop, but then how do we use Hadoop? How do we fork it? Like what was the kind of the thinking process at that point?
Yeah, you know, so at the time as we worked through that decision, you know, obviously you kind of mentioned a number of the options that are on the table, which is you can kind of just take kind of stock bits right out of Apache Hadoop and say, hey, I'm going to deploy those. You can say, I will take those bits, I'll modify them a little bit, and then I'll deploy them. That's kind of the forking model. Or we could also partner with the vendors that were already established in the space. And when we looked at that decision, you know, we had a number of trade-offs to make, including how fast could we get to market, what was going to be the best for us, for the broader Hadoop ecosystem. And we realized at the time, we decided at the time that we weren't really interested in deploying our own distro and kind of building and forking. Because once you do that, you kind of get on this treadmill of 25 interesting things happened since the last time you took a copy and made your changes, and now you've got to roll your changes forward and make sure nothing breaks. And there's a lot going on there. And we find that most of the customers are pretty satisfied with the capabilities that are in the distros. And so that kind of led us down the path of evaluating and landing on Hortonworks as the partner that we're working with.
Great. So then when you first decided, so you've made the decision to go with Hadoop, you've decided to use the Hortonworks distribution, and then now it became a problem of actually making it happen, right? So at that point, I understand that Hadoop didn't even run on Windows when we first came to the table. So how did we start to make progress there?
Yeah, you know, you could get Hadoop to run on top of Cygwin. And even if you went to the documentation pages, it was like, do this at your own risk. You know, this should work. You know,
but scary words.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so really the journey that we went on started with simply getting Hadoop up and running in the environment that we were interested in. And so that was Windows in Azure. You know, and that was a lot of, you know, just make it work. There were lots of places where the code that was written assumed that file delimiters went this way rather than this way. And I think I did that correct for, yeah, for the camera. You know, there were lots of things like that. Wherever Hadoop would reach out and kind of touch the operating system, and it would make some assumption about how the operating system forked processes or anything like that. You know, we were able to kind of just make a bunch of changes around the edges in order to get it to work. And then once we got there, it then led us to the next phase, which is like, hey, how do we make this great in the environment that we've chosen, Windows and Azure? And that involved kind of going super low level at times, working with the NT file system team to figure out how to get Java to drive maximum throughput to all of the disks that were attached to the machines, up to, hey, when we deploy this into Azure, how do we do it securely? And so that we then kind of moved to making it great in that environment.
That's wonderful. And you just mentioned Java. So I'm not sure if everyone is familiar with kind of the background of Hadoop, but this is all written in Java. So yes. I'm guessing that our Java expertise at Microsoft probably may not be top, or, you know, a top priority for when we're hiring people.
You know, I think it's that was definitely one of the big challenges that we had, was kind of growing that skill. And we did that through a combination of growing the talent and folks that we have here, as well as specifically hiring for that skill set, which was a little bit of a change for us. I came to the company about 10 years ago working on the .NET framework. So fast forward to working on this big giant open source Java app. I wouldn't have anticipated that 10 years ago. That's what's made it a lot of fun. But certainly, you know, kind of this entire thing was about us stepping into a world that we didn't create, and learning how to participate in that ecosystem.
Let's talk a little bit more about that ecosystem. So I know around any open source system, there tends to grow a community. So it sounds like you guys were participating in that community, you know, contributing things back. And like, did anyone get to, we were just contributors at that point, or did we ever get to the committers point?
Yeah. So, the answer is yes to both of those. Okay. We continue to do a lot of committing. I'm sorry, contributions. There's folks in the office just outside of me, probably working on some right now. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's just a matter of participation in the community. It's opening bugs. It's, you know, putting patches on bugs. It's doing code reviews. It's participating in design discussions on the development aliases. You know, just like you do on any other software project that you work on. You just do it so that it's got a publicly addressable URL, as opposed to something internal. And, you know, and then over time we've grown and we've got committers to both Hive as well as Core Hadoop, Yarn, and a few other projects as well.
That's awesome. Why don't we take a step back and define that for people who may not be as familiar with the open source community? What is the difference between a contributor and a committer?
Right. So you and I today could be a contributor. All we'd have to do is go find a bug that's already open or find a bug that we want to fix and submit a patch, right? Submit a code review saying, hey, I think this fixes the problem. Then we're contributors. You know, at some point that will get reviewed, and then a committer is actually somebody who has write access to the source depot, to the source control system. And so they are actually the ones who say, yes, Jennifer, this patch that you created, it's correct, it passes all the code review, it doesn't regress the code, we'll now commit that code to the mainline. And then at that point, your code is now living inside Apache Hadoop, or whatever project that you've contributed to. And so you end up kind of the different projects govern themselves differently. You know, if you just go out on GitHub, you are kind of the sole dictator of your project, and because you're the owner and you can do whatever you want. Projects in Apache are governed. There's an Apache steering committee. There's a committee that is in charge of the individual project, say Apache Hive. Then there are a set of committers, and then there's the contributors. And so that's kind of the hierarchy inside of a project that's governed by the Apache Software Foundation, which is a little different than there's also open source projects that are licensed with the Apache license. And so there's a difference between being governed by Apache and being licensed using the license.
That makes sense. Well, it's awesome to see that Microsoft has contributed so heavily to this, that we kind of reached the point that folks made, you know, this committer status, that they had right access to the core base, that we were kind of, you know, proving our value and hopefully doing some great stuff to help all of the Hadoop ecosystem, not just, you know, what we were trying to do at Microsoft. So that's just an amazing, a really cool story to hear, and makes me very proud of, you know, working at Microsoft. So for my next question, like, where was it hard, Matt? Like, where did we struggle? Like, it seems like this would be a really tough process. Just taking a group of database developers, because it was a SQL team that kind of started, I think, this you know, the Hadoop or the HD Insight team was originally pulled from SQL, I think. Mm-hmm. So if that's the case, you know, where did we see the growing pains, or where was it challenging?
Yeah, I think the growing pains were around you know, learning to participate in a public forum. You know, we had a lot of the team started out as engine developers or query optimizer developers, mm-hmm. And you know, very, very technically capable folks. But kind of the interaction model was kind of completely different than, you know, what we're used to kind of when we sit inside of Microsoft and submit a code review. You know, there's a milestone that we're working towards. There's a bunch of these things that kind of just become kind of the laws of physics that govern the universe you're used to. And it's a different set of physics in the open source world. And so, things about, you know, kind of getting to the point that you had a patch and then going through the code review process with a bunch of, you know, people that you've never met, that you're not sitting across the table from, just kind of writing you back in mail and saying, no, this isn't right. This isn't consistent with, you know, insert other piece of code here. You know, that's just a very different pattern. That was definitely something that it took getting used to. And that, you know, like participating in any new community, there's, you know, things work a little different than the community you came from. So that was one thing. I think that's the one that comes right off the top of my head.
Okay. So it sounds like we learned and we've kind of grown from all these challenges. And at this point, I think it's really exciting, number one, that we've grown to the point and we're contributing. The fact that we're contributing back to Apache and back to the core project is amazing. And how is open source software shaping, like, the investments that we make today on HD Insight?
Yeah, so I think that's a good question. We think about it as kind of a core kind of design tenet or design principle to think about the open source ecosystem. For instance, with Azure Data Lake, which is a service that we announced earlier this year at Build, it'll be available in a preview coming up. And, you know, we looked at that, and what that is it's a store that's designed for big data workloads. And we looked and we said, hey, what's the API surface that we're going to use here? We could build our own, or kind of the industry's kind of spoken, and HDFS, the Hadoop distributed file system, that's really the API most folks program against. That's what Hortonworks and Cloudera and MapR and Spark and Flink and all these things kind of assume that as the API. And so, you know, we've decided that will be the public API surface for Azure Data Lake. And, you know, that's just another example of, you know, the way our thinking on a lot of these things has changed. you know, over the last few years.
That's awesome. And then I think there was another project that I've been reading up on, the Stinger Initiative. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like we've done some great work there to actually give intellectual property back to Hadoop. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so the Stinger project is something that we worked on with Facebook and Hortonworks primarily. There were a number of other folks involved. But it started out for us with, again, we came from the SQL team, and so we have a lot of folks who think a lot about how do I optimize things that start with select and you know, relational algebras and all of these types of things. And so what the Stinger project kind of started from was one of our engineers saying, hey, there's a lot of things that we've learned in the decades of database work that we've done that could easily be applied here. Moving to a columnar file format is an example. Something called query vectorization is another one. And these are all terms that inside of traditional relational databases have been going on for quite some time. And they're all different ways to process more data faster, more efficiently, and get you answers faster. And so what we looked at doing was contributing similar things to Hive in particular. And so that was a file format that we worked on, as well as changes to the way that Hive operates and the way that it processes queries to take advantage of a lot of those things that we had learned in data warehousing. And it resulted in a pretty impressive speed up on Hive. You know, it was pretty cool to see queries that took hundreds of seconds go to tens of seconds. You know, it really kind of changed the way folks are able to use Hive.
That's incredible. Like, it's so exciting to think about. Our culture at Microsoft has shifted to the fact that a bunch of SQL Server developers are writing Java to support open source software. Like, that's just an amazing, it's just so cool to hear that we're doing this to do the right thing for our customers.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
That's awesome. All right, well, very cool. So, I mean, we've been through a lot. We've heard about just the number of engineering hours that Microsoft has invested in various projects in the Hadoop ecosystem. Hadoop, making Hadoop run like incredibly on Windows, all of the core contribution we've made back into that code base, the fact that we have committers into the Hadoop ecosystem, and just so much cool stuff really happening here. Is there anything that I missed, Matt, or anything else you'd like to share about our open source journey?
I don't know. I think that's enough for now. we can come back in a little bit. There'll probably be more to talk about too.
Excellent. Great. Well, thank you so much for your time, Matt. And it's it really, I think we've been at Microsoft about the same amount of time. And I have to say, just the shift we've seen and just the how your team is embracing open source is just a really cool thing to do and something that just makes me so proud of the company.
Cool.
So thanks for your time today.
Yeah, thank you.